children. Hi, and welcome to Cartwheels on the Sky, a brand new 30-minute poetry show on KGUA FM Gualala. I'm your host, Blake Moore, and for the next 13 weeks, you will get an intimate look into the mind and process of a poet. Tonight's featured poet is award-winning Ukiah poet Armand Brent. Holding an MFA in creative writing in English, Armand has devoted his life to teaching and writing poetry. Widely published in literary journals, he is also the author of 4, soon to be 5 volumes of poetry, as well as a book on writing poetry called Bringing Poems to Life, 16 Keys to Make Your Poems Sing. Armand was the City of Ukiah's first Poet Laureate and served on the Poet Laureate Committee for a total of 7 years after that. He is also a founding member of the Ukiah Haiku Festival, which has been a beacon for writers in Mendocino and beyond for over 17 years. A popular reader in the county, Armand is a recipient of several poetry awards, including a Jane Reichhold International Haiku Prize. As you will see, Armand Brent's poems are soulful incantations to the sorrows and joys inherent in human relationships. Funny and humane, fueled by the poet's elegant imagination, they take us on a journey that is simultaneously meditative and down to earth. Armand, welcome so much to Cartwheels on the Sky. It is such a pleasure to be able to talk poetry with you.
I'm really happy to be here. Thanks, Blake.
When did you first start writing poetry?
Well, I think I started writing in earnest probably in high school, like many budding poets do. But I will say I remember when I was in grade school, they had this is so weird. I've never heard of a class like this before. But when I was in my little grade school in Albuquerque, New Mexico, I think I was in second grade. They had a pullout class. I think they considered it for maybe gifted students or something. I'm not really sure. But all we did in the class was write poetry. And so I guess you could say my career, such as it is, started in second grade at Sombra del Monte Elementary School.
When did you start calling yourself a poet?
Well, I think, you know, I was writing quite a bit in my 20s, and then I decided to, you know, like many of us, I went to graduate school. I could have chosen something that was actually career-oriented, but instead I decided to go back to school in creative writing and English. So when I entered a master's program at San Francisco State, I think that's when I started to really consider myself a kind of working poet.
I ask that because I think some people feel that calling yourself a poet is a big deal because there's a certain frequency or gravitas to the word poet, right? You're like, it's almost like saying, I'm a yogi, and I know people sometimes take umbrage with that idea. Like, how dare you call yourself a yogi? You're like, well, I may be an advanced beginning yogi, but that's what I practice,
right.
So I think of myself that way. And I think a lot of poets I have found and the many, many poet friends I have say, oh, I still don't call myself a poet, you know? And so it's interesting to find that.
I think that's really a really interesting point because I think it took me a while actually to start identifying as a poet, but I think you really have to own it like everything else. You have to own it and name it. And I think once you start defining yourself as a poet, it sort of is empowering, you know, it's liberating. But I think some people are embarrassed to call themselves a poet or don't feel like they're writing as well as, you know, published poets or something. But I think it's very important to own that kind of psychic space as a poet.
I very much agree. And I think sometimes I know for myself, I became a poet more and a writer more because I was with an artist who said, gosh, you're always communicating. Just get a journal.
Yeah.
I was like, okay. And I did, and then I said, I'm a poet. And, of course, that's my style, right? I'm going to put myself on the front of the comment and say, I'm doing this. But I remember how I was ridiculed by people, like, who do you read?
And I was like, well, I'm just writing. And so there's a level that there is kind of this hierarchy of the word poet and what that does to us. I agree with the idea of owning it, because you have to just say, this is what I am, and then eventually you become that. You know,
yeah.
That is the process.
I agree. I mean, none of us start out as Emily Dickinson or Walt Whitman, but, you know, the territory of poetry is very broad. And as you said, I think unless you cross that threshold and call yourself a poet, it's very unlikely that you're going to become one.
Well, speaking of, you want to share a poem?
I certainly do. Well, I have some COVID-19 poems, because that is a universal experience right now. We're all feeling it. And that's been occupying a lot of my poetic real estate. So I'll read one here that I wrote in March. So this was really early on. It's called Test. This virus is testing us, but there is no proctor to ensure people refrain from cheating. There are no little bubbles to fill in with our number two pencils. We are free to puncture our solitude, but there is a price to pay. This is a test of our ability to sit still in our metal chairs. Can we put these pencils down and hum quietly to ourselves? Can we look over this sea of bodies and find love hovering just above their heads? Can we turn this auditorium of anxious scribbling into a few lines in the clean sand of the soul? There is a big schoolhouse clock on the wall, but it is a clock of our own making on a wall that isn't there. We are being tested in a torrid room of closed windows. We are taking a test in a language we do not understand. We are taking a test that has nothing to do with our constant contending. We are being asked to put down our pencils. This test is unmistakably real. This is not a test.
Whew, yes. Yeah.
I think that's when it was around that period of March something, mid-March or something, when I really began to understand the gravity of the situation and the need to, attend to it and be mindful. I didn't know then that this would keep, this would be so protracted, but I understood, the significance psychologically, I guess.
Oh, yeah,
and spiritually.
That whole idea that this is something we don't understand, and this is information we are being tested on that we don't even have access to, really. So this kind of brand new frontier. I actually use that in my classrooms, and Armand, you recorded it for me to include with some of my lessons in the early days. And I remember when you sent me that poem, I was just, it floored me. You capture it so beautifully.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I think what may be relatable in that poem is that this is a test that's unlike any other kind of test we've ever taken, anyone in the world has ever really taken.
Right, and then, of course, the ending, this is not a test,
It's
a test, but guess what? It's so real for us, too. I think that's one of the things about your poetry is your ability to capture just the moment with such an expanded, ineffable awareness, but then also cycle us right back and just, like the rock that just clunks into the pond, you're the ripple and you're the sink, at the same time, which I love about your work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you've also been a teacher. You want to talk about that?
When I was just after graduate school, I taught at San Francisco State for a while, and then I taught at various places, including JFK University in the Bay Area. And then when I moved up here, in the late 80s, I taught at Mendocino College for a while, and then I've taught workshops, of course. I was recently teaching at the Emmendahl Farm Arts Day program. That's Art Day, S-T-A-Y.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they have a summer program there. So,
where's the Emmendahl Farm?
Yes, I should probably mention where that is. It's about 40 minutes northeast of Willits.
Okay.
Yeah, it's in Mendocino County, and it's a beautiful kind of working farm, but they do a lot of retreat sort of things there. So I enjoy teaching. I've also taught haiku a lot. We, when I was the City of Ukiah's first poet laureate, we started a Ukiah Haiku Festival. And now we took a break this year, of course. Everybody's taking a break from everything. But we are in our, I think we're going into our 18th year of the Haiku Festival. So that required me to learn a lot about haiku. And I studied the form pretty intensely. And I've written a lot of haiku. And so I've taught haiku because I think that's such a beautiful, very distilled form where it's really an exercise in saying the most you can in the smallest space in a way. And so it's very expansive,
right,
but it's in a very small form.
Yeah, and it's a great editing tool, especially when working with youth, because, you know, that's the whole thing you're trying to get at, is that you don't have to say a lot to say a lot.
Exactly. It's,
you know,
a terrific teaching tool.
Yeah, and
I wrote
it incorporates the math. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was going to say I wrote a book on writing poetry called Bringing Poems to Life that I brought out in 2017, I think, and there's a fairly long appendix at the back of the book on haiku, because I think it's really instrumental in writing not just haiku, but sort of Western verse. Because as you said, it teaches you to see clearly and succinctly, and it eliminates all the abstractions and all the excess language.
And then it also incorporates that math part, right? So when you're teaching, you get the syllabic count.
Yeah, you know, when we started the Haiku Festival, we were cleaving pretty closely to that 17-syllable, 5-7-5 syllable, three-line form. But one of the mentors of our process
was Jane Reichold,
who is a
legend on the coast.
Yes. And she was wonderful, and she really took us under her wing. She would provide workshops here in Ukiah. She talked at length to our little organizing committee and taught us kind of a more contemporary approach to haiku. So we, over the years, we kind of moved more towards a short line, long line, short line form of haiku, because it kind of opens up the form a little bit. And also, there's no equivalent in English syllabic usage to the Japanese syllable form. And so they're not really analogous.
Right.
So there is no real 17 syllables in the Japanese form. So we figured it might make the form a little more accessible and also a little more flexible for people if we just went short, long, short.
Uh-huh.
Which is what we ended up doing.
So that's the rule, is short, long, short.
Pretty much. I mean, try to make sure that, we make sure that people, you know, at least try to have a seasonal implication and, you know, it's about a moment in nature, a moment of insight. You know, there's the kind of usual haiku, I guess you'd call them, you know, constraints or elements, but in terms of the syllables, now we just make it short, long, short.
You want to read us a couple haiku? Do you have
some?
Oh,
gosh, I don't know if I have.
You have any close by? Okay.
Well, actually, yeah, if I go to the, let me just go to the appendix in the book, because I do have that. I think there's some of my haiku in there.
And which book are you reading from right now?
This is the book Bringing Poems to Life, 16 Keys to Make Your Poems Sing.
Okay.
So that's the book I wrote about writing. And I'll just read four haiku, because there's one. In haiku, the seasons are very important. So there's one spring, one summer, one fall, and one winter haiku here that I wrote. so here's the spring one. An owl flashes into a moonbeam, and disappears. I'll read these twice because they're short. An owl flashes into a moonbeam and disappears. And then the summer one is empty pockets strolling along the beach, a sand dollar. Mm-hmm. Empty pockets strolling along the beach, a sand dollar. And fall, apple trees nearly the same size as their shadows. Mm-hmm. Apple trees nearly the same size as their shadows. And finally, winter. Winter sun sets behind the hills, pages darken. Winter sun sets behind the hills, pages darken.
I want to take just a moment and let you know that the voice you're listening to is that of Armand Brent. He's a poet from Ukiah, and I'm Blake Moore, and you're listening to a new poetry show here on KGUA called Cartwheels on the Sky.
Those are some haiku, and they don't conform to the 575 syllables.
No, but
they
you
are
can feel the lot, the short. I could, maybe because I understand the format, I can feel the short, long, short, short, long, short. I can actually imagine them on the page. And I want to say that is what makes that form so incredible. What I just feel like we just went through a year. You really captured each of those seasons with such like dynamic aliveness that, I mean, I suddenly was inside reading a book, and I felt the apple trees. I felt that fall light here on the coast right now with July, and there hasn't been a lot of sun, so that was a little harder for me to relate to, but that's only because I've been wallowing in the fog lately and a little frustrated because I really want the sunshine. But you really captured that so beautifully.
Well, I think that's, thank you. I think that's the beauty of haiku. As I said, they can be so, they can capture these little moments in time, but they can be such a concentrated kind of version of the season or a particular moment that they really can kind of just ripple out, you know, in this incredible way. So, yes, I'm a huge fan of haiku.
You know, what's your process for when you write?
Well, you know, mostly I'm writing, excuse me, the typical kind of verse that I write. But there are moments that just strike me as haiku moments.
Mm-hmm.
And they maybe are not, they don't really lend themselves to maybe a full-blown kind of lyrical poem.
Right.
But they are a very nice little snapshot of a particular moment. And the thing that I've noticed is it's pretty hard to switch from kind of writing the poetry that you typically write to writing haiku. I don't know neurologically what's happening or what's happening in the brain, but they are really two different kinds of seeing.
Right.
And you have to open yourself in different ways to the different forms. So the way that I look at the world when I'm writing my usual kind of poetry, it's really different than the kind of awareness and openness and kind of spaciousness where I just let the world, you know, flow in. That's kind of more necessary for a haiku. So they're very different, and it's very hard for me to switch back and forth. I kind of have to be in the right mood for each one.
Right. Why don't you share another poem?
Let me read the title poem from the last book that I put out, which is called Aliens of the Midway. So this poem is, of course, called Aliens of the Midway. And this is when we were actually able to go out and do things. So this poem takes place at a little local fair carnival. Of course, that didn't happen this year. This is called Aliens of the Midway. When the June sun goes down and the colored bulbs on the Ferris wheel light up and the ducks floating near the wishing well fold their terrestrial heads under the carnival tent of their wings and the air becomes redolent with the sweet, musky scent of kettle corn and cannabis the fare is transported to a nebula of colored gas, dust, and unforgiving spandex. Sodium lights cast funhouse shadows around teenagers with skull tattoos, bow-legged cowboys with discolored teeth, girls with eyes lined in licorice and hair like spun candy, and the bobbing bandanas of gangbangers pulling at pit bulls with jaws like exploding stars. Hundreds of these beings float just above the cratered grass of the Midway. Here, boys and girls become phosphorescent when their antennae touch. They're all beckoned by gray-skinned barkers behind curlicues of nicotine smoke who dare them to toss dinged-up ping-pong balls into grassy glass goldfish bowls, fling darts at indefatigable balloons, or tumble down weighted metal milk bottles with ossified baseballs. These dispossessed of the Midway vie for stuffed animals or inflatable aliens who remind them of home. They spend their crumpled bills on the sheer animal thrill of getting dizzy on the tilt-a-whirl. They laugh, they puke, they kiss. They consume corn dogs and drink cheap yellow beer from plastic cups manufactured half a world away. For this one night, these celestials inherit the Midway of the Earth that spins like a bright top through the cosmos of spangles and black holes, and at closing time, they drive off in beat-up spacecraft borrowed from a four-eyed cousin who lives on a distant star. When they look back on this night of vertigo and haunted houses, of empty pockets and near misses, it will seem like someone else had inhabited their shimmering, weightless, gullible bodies.
Fantastic. I love that poem. Oh, those were the days, huh?
Those are the days when we could actually go out and do things. And I just love to go to the county fair and the local fairs, because it's for one thing, it's such a cultural experience. And another thing, I'm a photographer, so you get some really interesting strange juxtapositions and interesting photos at these affairs too.
Because it's something that's accessible for everybody, and
Mm-hmm. See the whole swath.
Yeah, and in a way, like unlike the big amusement parks, when they come, the county fairs, they come through your town, it's like a mix of everyone where you live versus, going on some big trip to somewhere else. So in that sense, you get exposed to people that maybe you wouldn't normally.
I'm a big advocate of writing about where you live, right? Well, first of all, writing real lived experience, which I guess by definition often means where you live.
Right.
I think that makes it much more emotionally kind of genuine.
Yes. Yeah. We're unfortunately, of course, as happens, we're going to be running out of time. So what I'd like you to do is tell me about what you're working on next. You got a book coming out, and then take us out with one more poem. Would that work for you?
Okay, sure. I'm bringing out my fifth collection of poetry called "We All Went a Little Crazy." So I think that's the poem I'll end with. And it's at least this quarantine situation has given me the time to work on this manuscript. I will say that this book is different than any other book I've written because it includes a lot of poems. My wife passed away in December, and it includes a lot of poems about dealing with grief. So that's a subject, of course, that I hadn't been addressing in previous books. And also it has a number of these COVID quarantine poems. So that's also very different. So that should be out in August or September of this year, and which is odd because I can't really do the traditional setting up readings, public readings, and so on. So I'm not sure how that's all going to work out. But anyway, I'm glad that it's in process. And I'm happy to read this title poem, if I hear this. It's another, of course, COVID poem. It's called We All Went a Little Crazy. When we think back on this time, we'll realize we all went a little crazy. We all became strange hothouse flowers under the heat lamps, humidity, and unreasonable expectations for beauty under pressure. After all, on every side, the virus was pressing against the glass panes of our vulnerability. And we all understandably went a little crazy trying to reach the filtered light. During this spell, the whole world became an icon with a red line slashed across it. Without warning, the world placed a closed sign in its window. And we all went a little crazy trying to distance ourselves from everything but our own minds. On the other hand, everything became clearer, brighter, as if the world had just undergone cataract surgery. Maybe everything was suddenly too vibrant, too bell-like, too fragrant. Consequently, we all went a little crazy, and we missed one another with a terrible loneliness. Touch was the only sense that atrophied, and we all went a little crazy.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for taking this time out and sharing your beauty and poetry with us. I'm so
My pleasure.
Honored for this
Thank
conversation.
Thank you for asking me.
Yeah.
Thank you, Blake.
I look forward to reading that book.
Okay. It'll be out soon.
And that was the fabulous Armand Brent. I hope you enjoyed our poetic conversation. It was wonderful to share this time with you. Cartwheels on the Sky is the name of this new show, and I am your host, Blake Moore. Thank you so much for listening, and have a delightful rest of your evening. Stay tuned for more great programming right here on KGUA FM Wallala.